following is a message at Living Savior Church in Asheville and Hendersonville, North Carolina. To learn more, go to lsavior.org.
Do you know what it's like to be like this woman who's a member of our church who wonders if there's ever going to be a time when she must make atonement for her sins? Do you know what that's like? She said, "Pastor," and she walked up to me. She said, "There are times when I really wonder if God is going to call me to account. And why do I feel that way? Am I weird? Is it only me?" You might know that pastors get a chance to talk to just a couple people, sarcasm intended. And so I got to assure her that she is not weird. She is, in fact, quite normal. And that's not the first time that I've heard that. I've actually lost count. I remember sitting in a seminary classroom and a professor saying, "Never, ever, ever underestimate the sensitivity of a stricken conscience." And when you're a seminarian and you haven't really spent that much time with people, you kind of nod and be like, okay. But then you listen to people and you talk to people who in the hardest moments, not only of life, but of their soul and of their mind, they wonder if God is just ready to smite them, if he's gonna have them empty their pockets and show all of the guilt and the shame and the rap sheet, and then they will have to make atonement. Then they will finally have to fess up for the things that they did in their past and the thoughts that they think in their present and whatever lies in the future. It's not only gonna be the shameful moment for the people around them, and that's the beginning of atonement, that's just the tip of the iceberg, but they will have to fess up and face up before God. Is she weird? Am I weird for telling her that she's not weird or alone? Good Friday has something to say. It has everything to say for a conscience that is curious and a conscience that is crushed. And anything in between for the person who stands before God and wonders, because you know you better than anyone else knows you. And you know God knows you better than even you know you. And in Good Friday, God says, not just enough. He says, it's finished. He not only says it all, he shows you. He wants your eyes to be wide open. A story that was shared with me recently helped make that very crystal clear this week. Story goes this way. There was a wedding and there was a lot of people who crossed paths, and this young man walked up to this older man and he said, "Hello, do you remember me? I was one of your third grade students." And the older man said, "I've had lots of students. I haven't seen a lot of them in many years. Can you remind me of your name?" The curse of a teacher over decades. "Do you remember me? How unfair." And then he shared his name. He said, "Do you remember me? Oh yeah, I remember you now. What has become of your life? What are you now doing?" He said, "I'm actually a teacher," the young man said. "You inspired me to get into education, and here I am. You changed and so influenced my life, and here I am." "Well, what influenced your life?" the old man said, now retired. He said, "Well, you did. You saved my soul. Remember that one time, the watch?" And the old man said, "You'll have to forgive me. I don't recall." The young man said, "See if this jogs your memory. You see, I wanted a watch so bad and my parents couldn't afford it. And then one day one of my classmates had a watch. He set it on the table and I swiped it and I stuck it in my pocket. And he told you when you came into the classroom and you told whoever stole the watch just to give it back. And I didn't. And so you closed the door and you said, 'We're going to do something. Everyone get on the wall and everyone close your eyes.' And I thought, this is the day. This is the day where everybody is going to find out who I really am. The most shameful moment of my life. It's going to ruin my life forever. Everyone's going to see that I'm rotten. I'm a no good." And you started going through every single one of the students' pockets. And you came to mine and you found the watch. And you went through everyone's pockets. And after that, you told everyone to sit down. And you gave the watch back and you said nothing of it. And that totally changed my life. And you saved my soul. As the story goes, the young man said, "And that's why I wanted to become a teacher, because I learned my lesson and you didn't have to make an example of me. Don't you remember that? That was kind of a big deal." And the old man said, "Young man, I don't remember that part of the story." The young man says, "How could you not remember? I stole the watch. You pulled it out of my pocket. You kind of remember my name now and who I am." And the old man said, "I don't remember that part of the story. Because I close my eyes too. In a world where absolutely everybody keeps track, and where the score always has to amount to winners and losers, not just on some scoreboard in March Madness, but in our head and in our hearts against the perpetrators against us, and yes, we who are the assailants against others with our words and actions. In a world where all we know is guilty consciences and rap sheets, we are like that woman. We are those plenty of other people who wonder if in any moment we are going to be found out, and God is not just going to tell everyone to close their eyes, and he's going to empty our pockets of all of the sins that we've committed, and here we stand before him. Here comes the crushing blow that we've been waiting for. And when someone shared that story with me this week, I couldn't help but ask myself, I wanted to share it with other people just to get their reaction. Because I wondered if they had a similar reaction to it as I did. I shared it with family, I shared it with friends, I shared it with other pastors, I shared it with Vicar. Vicar came in with his take on it right away, which I appreciated. You know, little did he know. And you know what I took away from that? Is that a picture of God? Because God doesn't close his eyes. Everything leading up to that final moment, God's eyes are wide open. This is his plan. From the fact that there are no bones that are broken to the fact that his side would be pierced. It was all laid out over centuries and over a millennia. This is what God planned. Do you think he's just going like this? No, his eyes zero in. As every ounce of punishment and every weight of eternal scorn presses down upon his son, and he not only doesn't close his eyes, he doesn't want us to close our eyes either. But not so that we would feel ashamed, but so that we would know that every ounce of God's love is being poured out. Even as it seems contradictory that every ounce of his punishment is meted out against his son. And here's the great irony, the great contrast of all eternity, that God is holy and just, and eternally gracious and merciful, and the collision course we have been following throughout all of Lent meets right here, the intersection of the cross, so that all of his punishment would go on Jesus, so that not an ounce of it would be seen by you. And he doesn't do that behind closed doors, and it's not behind some closed curtain. It's right out there in the open, so that pagans and Romans and believers and unbelievers and mother and new stepson can all see it. So that John, right here in this chapter, as he will in the next chapter about the resurrection, these are written that you may believe. I've witnessed it. I've seen it. These are written that you may believe. No closed eyes. Oh, except for one part. See, God didn't necessarily close his eyes, but he did turn away. That's what to forsake means. That on the back side of God's head, as he turns his benevolent presence away from anyone who would behold it, you have the essence of hell. Not only does God know who you are, but he now wants absolutely nothing to do with you. That is what it means when Jesus says, "Why do you forsake me?" as he welcomes us into that horrific drama, as was shared earlier. The Father doesn't just turn a blind eye like he's hiding something and becoming ignorant of something. He turns his face because he is forsaking that one and therefore would never you and me. And so look at the man who had full pockets long ago in John chapter 3, who had all of these questions before Jesus. Nicodemus, remember? I hear you're a teacher and he's got all these questions. And he comes to Jesus at night and he's so filled with even guilt that he hides from people. And who's the only guy helping out Joseph of Arimathea? What does that teach you about sin and shame? That God welcomes you too to the cross, and what do you have? You do not have pockets full of guilt that will be emptied for you and everyone to see your sin and your shame and your past and your guilt. No. Instead, you get to see with eyes wide open exactly what God thinks about you. That he now chooses by his grace to turn a blind eye to your sin. As he said through the prophet Jeremiah, "The time is coming when I will make a new covenant with my people, where I will forgive their wickedness and will remember their sin no more." It was quite impactful about a year ago when we had our unified service and there were pocket crosses that were being handed out. Crosses that were turned into pins. But I like the idea of a pocket cross. It's while you're trying to find your keys that you misplaced. You're trying to find your cell phone. You stumble upon that reality. There's nothing in your pockets that's going to be made known. God already took care of it on the cross and it's secured. I took a couple of my kids down to Hendersonville Rec to play some basketball and I met a man on the way out. He struck up a conversation as though he was about to evangelize me. Pastors can smell that from a mile away. So I played along. I played dumb. It's easy for me. He said, you know, I got something you might want to put in your pocket, but can I tell you about it first? And I said, please do. He said, but first, can I ask you what you do? And I said, oh, the gig is up. I'm a pastor. He's like, you weren't going to tell me, were you? I said, you're doing a great job. Why would I kill it? He said, I still want to give this to you. You have your kids here. You have a wife. He said, take one for her too. And he handed me a pocket cross made of olive wood. And he said, you want to know why I hand these out? It's not just for other people, but I hand these out because it's mostly for me. So I can constantly bump into the fact that Jesus paid for me. He paid for my sins. You know what I said to him? You ever think about being a pastor? He was 75. He says, I'm too old. I said, says who? It's amazing that an old man I met once, haven't seen since, a man like Nicodemus who was there with questions and curiosities and even some accusations as those questions come across. A woman like the one who wonders if God is out to get her, and a person like the one standing in front of you who has his own rap sheet too, that all of us stand before a cross and God leads us to lean in for one reason and one reason alone. That we would only know the depth of his mercy and we would, with eyes wide open, with hearts filled with faith, see the lengths to which our God would go. That he would give his son for you, for me, for good. It's finished. Amen. Mm-hmm.